What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. My name is Alex Croson. I am one of your hosts.
He is. He's one of them.
I'm alongside, as always, the magnanimous Mr. Casey Clapp.
Well, thank you. Even in victory, I'm a nice guy.
Yes. Is that what magnanimous means?
Yes, yes. It would mean that if you defeated me, you would take, basically you'd be honorable and you'd be like, all right, you lost, but you're still cool.
I would take pity on you?
I think so, sort of. That would be it. But I think the idea is that it's more of an honorable kind of pity.
Okay. Yeah. Like a good loser.
Yeah. No, good winner.
A good winner.
Yes. You're not going to rub it in everyone's faces. You'll be like, all right, great. Oh, let's move on.
Oh, you're saying if I was magnanimous, I would be a good winner.
Yes. So okay. If I am magnanimous, then that would be the case. Yeah.
You know what, Casey? I do pride myself in this. I think I am magnanimous.
Yeah, that's really good.
I'm a big fan of games, like board games and card games.
Yeah.
And if I ever win, God forbid. I would say I'm an extremely gracious winner.
Yeah.
I like the fun of the game itself. I don't give a shit who wins or loses.
Yeah, that's fair. Can I ask a question I don't think I've ever asked?
Sure.
What's your favorite board game?
Wow.
He looks up at his board game collection, which is vast and mighty.
I don't really have favorites of all time of most of anything.
Okay, what about like
right now?
Yeah.
I love this game called Campy Creatures.
Campy, is that that's a board game specifically?
Yes.
Okay.
It's cards and a board.
Isn't campy kind of meaning like a little bit like kind of silly or like overdone? Uh-huh. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So Campy Creatures is a game with a sort of monster movie theme.
Okay.
There's, you know, the vampirus and the King Kong type, beast they call it in that game.
Gotcha.
And it's a trick-taking game, which is where you kind of bet cards against your other player's cards, and whoever plays the highest card gets to do something first.
Okay.
That's sort of trick-taking. People who really know what trick-taking is are going to roll their eyes at that description. But
that's fair.
You know, like the game,
thanks for dumbing it down for me.
Well, no, I'm dumbing it down for myself. I don't really even know. Yeah, it's great. It's so much fun. It's a fantastic two player game and it's a kind of chaotic four player game. I'm going to give you one more.
Yeah, please.
Here's one for you, Case.
All right.
It's called Illimat.
Illimat. Okay.
And it is, created and designed by one of the guys from, the Decemberists.
Oh, yeah.
And his wife, who's an illustrator.
They also wrote a book, like the Wildwood Stories or something like that.
Yes. I forget his name. I want to say Chet Baker, but it's definitely not Chet Baker.
Definitely not Chet Baker.
But yeah, that's a fun one. It's beautiful. It's got kind of a farming seasonal theme. It's kind of right up our alley.
Hey, it totally is. Honestly, I'd love to get him on the show and talk to him.
That would be wonderful. Casey, as much as I might love it, we're not here to talk about card games and board games and
that's
such.
That's fair.
We're here to talk about a tree.
We sure are, Alex.
And the tree we're talking about specifically today is a much requested, potentially the most requested.
You think it is?
Top five, at
least.
Well,
yeah, certainly. But wow, we should try to do that that math. See which one did they ask for the most?
I think this is at least top five, if not top three.
All right, that's fair.
It is fan favorite, beloved by all. The pawpaw.
Pawpaw.
Every grandpa's favorite fruit.
Yeah, right? I think, was it you or maybe Hannah? Someone said, where's the mama tree?
Yeah.
Where is that?
Well, I get maybe if you cross a pawpaw with like a mango tree.
Oh, then it would
the
be
hybrid
would
be called a mama.
Ooh, I like that. That would be probably pretty tasty.
Probably delicious
fruit.
Yeah,
you'd probably like it specifically.
You know what I would love?
Yeah.
A mango with no pit. Just straight mango flesh.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
Oh,
I think
man,
the
I would
that,
get down with that.
You can't, you'd be, you, it would not be a good idea. The reason I think that is that you would inevitably cut yourself while you're opening it. It's the same reason why you should always have a pit in the middle of an avocado. If you don't, when you're cutting into it, you're just going to slice right through to your hand.
Okay, well that's a fair argument.
This is what I think.
I think I would put the mama on a cutting board
and
slice through it.
Okay, maybe that's fair.
But if it's oblongly round like that, it might roll away.
Yeah, so you got to be careful.
And then I've got a gash in my hand.
Yeah,
heading to the ER.
Anyway, this is dangerous fruit, is what we're saying.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Casey, let's imagine as we do every episode. That you and I, hey, how about this? I just read that the largest pawpaw tree is in Virginia, I think.
Virginia?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
And it's between the houses of Mark Twain and Harriet Beecher.
Wow, you're kidding me. I guess they lived next to each other?
Potentially. I hope this isn't apocryphal. Say that that's true. And let's say we're there. We're there to see Mark Twain's house as big fans of his.
Yeah, that sounds good.
and we come across this pawpaw tree. Casey, let's ID this tree.
All right. So we have done much research into how to say this name. It is Asimina triloba.
I think you did great.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
I'm going to offer, and this may fuck us up, but I'm going to offer an alternative pronunciation.
Okay, please do.
Asimina.
Asimina. I think that's very fair. I don't know if we're trying to like really stick with like the Greekness or the Latinness of what this technically should be. Ironically enough, it's a word from neither one of those languages, a language from completely across the world.
That's right.
So I don't know. I think either way is fine.
I'll tell you why later. I think it's maybe a cinema.
Ooh, okay. Now here's what I always wanted to say though is Asimina or something like that. I'm sorry, Asimina. Am I just saying the same thing again?
Yes.
Wow, good for me. I've got it in my brain. Alex, let me tell you about this tree. So the this is a small tree. It doesn't get more than maybe 40 feet tall, like at most.
Oh, wow.
Generally, it's going to be that mid-story tree that's not going to be the top of the canopy. It's not going to be at the bottom. But it is, it's just kind of one of those little ones that you run into as you're walking through the forest. Like the leaves will hit you in the face. And it grows in mostly lowland areas, kind of generally speaking. When I was in the Congaree National Park in South Carolina, I found a bunch of them. Nothing else is out. There's almost no leaves anywhere except these gorgeous little flowers just saying hello. And they're stunning.
Yeah.
Have you seen these flowers?
Casey,
Alex. Well, we'll describe the rest of the tree. So everyone can take a second, Google that.
I have a controversial. My first controversial take, and I hope people don't hate me for this.
You know, this has been a controversy-free podcast this entire time, and you're going to start now.
I just don't like. I don't like stirring the pot. Okay,
yeah, you're okay.
I don't like rocking the boat. I don't like kicking the hornet's nest.
Yeah, well,
but
careful.
I will say,
is that the other name for our listenerships?
The hornet's nest. A very small 1% sect of our listeners.
Yeah, there you go.
Compose the hornet's nest. I think these flowers look kind of ugly.
Wow.
I'm so sorry.
I'm stunned.
Just yesterday, you and I were walking around. We found a Norway maple.
Yeah.
That was a crimson king varietal.
Yeah, with like the purple leaves.
Yes, and that's the same purple I see here.
Yeah.
And I just am not a fan of that color.
That's right. You don't like that color. Okay. Anyway, you're going to see these flowers. Beautiful, ugly, freakish, delightful. That's going to be the first thing you see in the springtime. And they kind of grow off of the twigs, and they just kind of angle straight down. At least that's the way I saw them. And they are this dark maroon, kind of rusty maroon, brownish color. Not brown in a dull way, but in a very bright and kind of ruby-esque kind of way. But not quite so ruby-esque that you can call it a ruby. That brown is I think that might be one thing that you kind of are like, no thank you.
It's like dried blood.
Yeah, that's perfect. Wow, it's perfect, but it's a bit, I can see you don't like it.
A little visceral for you.
Yeah, a little visceral. Oh, man. Well, I think they're beautiful, and they're notably, the scientific name suggests, triloba, that specific epithet, is referring to the fact that the leaves themselves, the petals are in groups of three. So there's six petals, and there's three little ones, and then there's three big ones on the outside. But you know, like you take two triangles, and you can like rotate them so that now you have like six points in between each like sort of thing.
Yeah, is that a Star of David?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's exactly the shape. These kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
Except the middle petals are half the size as the longer ones on the outside. It's like layered.
Is this a unique thing in nature? Because if they named it after, triloba, it must be a big deal.
No, it's really not. Like everything in the lily family, for instance, is all characterized by having sexual parts in groups of three.
Okay.
So you can tell it really quickly. The trillium is another great example where everything, their leaves, their petals, their sepals, their flower parts, piston, stamen, they're all in groups of three or six or nine or 12 or whatever you have.
Okay.
So it's not entirely unknown. My guess is that when they're looking at it, whenever you're giving a description of a plant, you just kind of got to pick something. Usually they try to pick something that is very unique to that plant. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if maybe it's just so obvious where everyone's like, yeah, try loba. There's three lobes, you know?
Okay.
Something like that. So I'm not really sure. But as the flower comes and then goes, you'll start to see the leaves appear. So the flowers usually come as the leaves are coming out or just before. And then the leaves come out and, oh my gosh, these leaves are so great because they're really like long and kind of floppy eared leaves, but they come out left and right, left and right, left and right. They're alternately arranged on the stem.
Okay.
So when they grow outwards kind of flat, they just go whoop, 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 left and right, left and right. And then they make this kind of flattish looking plane of leaves on this long kind of extended twig. And it looks really interesting to me. Like you can tell really quickly because some leaves are kind of bunched up down at the end of a twig. Some like grow upward so they kind of are more radially around.
Uh-huh.
But in my experience, the pawpaw grows more horizontally all the time. So you get these like flat sprays coming out.
Yesterday, Casey, we saw a horse chestnut.
Yes.
And it had very floppy leaves, but mm-hmm. you said later in the season, those leaves will be sticking straight out.
Yeah.
Does the pawpaw ever get there or are they permaflop?
No, they're usually, they do lift up and kind of, they kind of lift up, but then kind of at the end.
Okay.
You know, a little bit.
A bit hemlockish.
A little bit hemlockish. A little bit of a weeping yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
But you know, speaking of the horse chestnut,
uh-huh.
the leaves of the pawpaw look exactly like the leaflets of the horse chestnut.
Casey, they do. Is there a relation here at all?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're even very closely related whatsoever.
Okay.
Yeah, but they are, I mean, they're both plants, but we'd have to look at the taxonomy to see exactly where they're at.
Sure. The clade.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. You're right. That was good. So what they look like is essentially they have a tapering base. They're obovate, but they're really wide near the end, and then they taper really gently down to the base of the leaf. And then at the front, they usually have a little drippish tip at the, just kind of comes to a little point at the end,
okay.
with veins that kind of come off left and right, that kind of are sprayed forward. It's a medium green. There's a little bit of hair on the bottom. And they tend to lose that hair as the season goes on, which a lot of plants end up doing.
The last three sentences have had so many gross words.
Oh, sorry, Alex.
Pubescence, no, it's good.
Glaucousness.
You said, I can't remember now.
Yeah, you just had to block it out of your memory that quickly.
Veins and yeah. hairs and tips. And
whoops. This is a very sexual plant is what we're finding.
Plants yeah. themselves are very sexual.
They are.
We can see their parts yeah. Splayed out.
Right? Everyone go calm down. Oh my gosh, spring is really getting us in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
Well, Alex, it turns out that no one really is like drawn to this pawpaw, this kind of short tree. The bark is usually utility bark. It's nothing too fancy.
Mm.
No one really goes out and is like, oh my God, the leaves of the pawpaw. Some people, like me, would be like, the flowers of the pawpaw, so cool. But
sure.
90% of the people who are out here are looking at the pawpaw and saying, give me that fruit, where's that fruit?
Yeah, man, let's talk fruit. This thing, I mean, we, you know, when you say pawpaw, I think, oh, a pawpaw fruit, yeah. not even a pawpaw tree.
Exactly.
In the same way, when if you said orange, I would say, oh, like the fruit, not yeah. an orange tree.
So, so accurate, Alex. Yeah. Well, this is the thing that everyone loves. And usually the fruit comes out in like groups of two or three on the stem.
Yeah.
And they pop out and they look, I've heard it described as the size of a good sized cucumber in the shape. It also looks like a mango or a papaya.
Yeah, it's very mango like.
Yeah. And they're kind of like that sort of green that is very muted, almost a mint green that got bashed by lime green to the point where they both changed color a little bit.
Wow.
That's what I see.
And then outside it was like sort of misting white.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like not raining white, but yeah. misting white.
And that is the origin story of the color of this, precisely.
Wow, where did you read this folklore?
Well, no, sorry, that just comes from inside out.
This is modern folklore.
Yes, exactly.
We're writing it as it happens.
Well, it's just this gorgeous, like understated color of a fruit, and it matches really, really closely with the color of the foliage itself. So as you are kind of looking for it, the funny thing is you don't really see it. Like it doesn't, like a blueberry or a raspberry, something like that, they pop out. Like you can see them really clearly juxtaposed to the green of whatever they're growing on. Whereas the pawpaw does not do that. The fruit, you have to like lift it up and find it. And you're like, ah, there it is. Once your eyes can kind of adjust to the curves and like see the difference in the texture, then you can kind of see them really easily.
You mean because it's kind of, they're kind of tucked under the leaves?
Exactly, okay. Yeah. There's like an umbrella of leaves, and then the fruit is underneath it, and they're all the same color.
Okay. Now that sounds very tropical to me.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, you kind of have to know. Yeah, you got to smell it in order to find it. It's not going to, it doesn't go out there and say, hey, eat me. It's just more like, if you find me. Yeah, it's a very coy plant, I would say.
Wow, the coy pawpaw.
Yeah, exactly.
Move over fish.
Yeah, move over fish. You are no longer top of the koi chain here. they're just these nice little understory trees. Like I said, they don't get very tall, so you can always walk under and kind of find them. The fruit is, I believe I've heard, it tastes like a banana that has a run-in with a mango.
Oh, here we go.
And then
more folklore.
Yeah, and then essentially got together and then had a great time, had a good party, the love child of that party, then met this orchid who was just walking through town, Vanilla, and then they got together, had a quick sojourn, and boom, you get this this flavor that's very tropical in every regard. It has all the big tropical things all smashed into one.
Sounds wonderful. Yeah. I'm going to put out a blast here, Casey.
All right.
A notice. If anybody living in a part of the country that has a lot of pawpaws would like to make my year, come September, if you want to send us some pawpaws, because I don't know if we even can buy them in Portland, Casey.
That's a good question. I don't actually know if they are, because they're notoriously difficult to grow and transport.
Yeah.
Well, that is the main reason they're not like a commercial thing, is that they tend to bruise easily and they don't last long.
Okay.
In our modern agricultural system.
Well, maybe you can't send them, but if there's any way to get some pawpaws here, if anybody can facilitate that, it would be much appreciated. I'm dying to try this.
Reach out. I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah. I cannot wait.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I will take on that that daring adventure with you.
Yeah. Wonderful.
One thing to note, which I always love, is that technically this is a berry. The pawpaw is a berry.
Is it really?
That is correct.
Okay.
It's strictly fleshy inside. With in that flesh is suspended the seeds. That's how it works. So a tomato is another quintessential example where you cut it, it's all flesh, and then it has those little seeds kind of interspersed in there.
Okay, the same way a raspberry. Well, raspberry is not a berry, right?
No, exactly. That's a conglomerate of
That's
berries.
Right.
So really, it would be raspberries. is one berry.
I love how you pronounce the P.
Yeah, I really like to make
Rasp
sure one knows.
Berries.
Yeah, so each one of those, I think that's an aggregate of berries, essentially, because there's one seed in one individual little, those little pillows of the raspberry, each individual little bubble.
So when you eat one raspberry, you're getting like 30 servings of fruit.
Essentially, yeah.
That's,
yeah,
exactly, that's just, right. That's good nutrition.
It's really good nutrition, and tastes delicious to boot.
Casey, how about some Croson's homegrown trivia?
Well, I would love to hear some, Alex.
Should we have a little musical sting for this at some point?
Absolutely. I thought you already had one.
I imagine sort of like the sound of a plant growing really fast, like and then a little where it little opens up.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel like we're just one step away from being like a PBS special or something.
Yeah, I think we're more than one step, but I think we're headed there.
Yeah, that's where we're gonna go.
Casey, let's talk the etymology. Now, this is a mess.
It
I
is.
Just want to say that up front. There's a lot happening. We have several sources that are all saying different things, and our theory, or at least my theory, and you agreed, was that all of these things are true. And they developed perhaps independently.
Yeah.
And so we are reading all these sources. There doesn't seem to be one clear path that this word took.
It doesn't go A to B to C to D to here.
No.
It was, I think you're right. I think it probably, like, you could follow the trace back to multiple different potential places.
Yeah.
But all of those places ultimately go back to the same, like, two places.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive in and see if we can't make sense of this word, pawpaw.
Pawpaw.
And the scientific name. So the scientific name, which is?
Asimina.
Triloba.
Ah, thank you. Sorry. I literally was like doing all of the syllables in my brain after that and completely forgot that there's more to be said.
And Casey, you remember how I said I think it might be Asimina?
Yes.
Here's why. So in 1763,
uh-huh,
a French naturalist named Michel Adanson, perhaps,
oui,
named the genus of this tree Asimin. Which came from, he took from an Algonquin word, asimin.
Yep.
That word, asimin, the Algonquin word, potentially also the Powhatan word.
Yeah.
Asimina.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Is their word for this fruit.
Yes, precisely.
That we are calling the pawpaw.
They called it the asimin.
Yes.
The asiminin.
Asimin.
Yeah.
Here's why I think it might be asimin, because another word,
uh-huh,
persimmon,
mm,
for another fruit.
I see.
So I'm matching pronunciations there, oh, which is why I think it's asimmon.
I gotcha. Yeah, and then min is the that's the thing that they have in common, which means maybe fruit.
Yes, min is the Algonquin word for fruit.
I see.
So I would be interested to see what other fruits are called in Algonquin.
Yeah, seriously, that would be really interesting. Like to see what they all call fruit. You remember when we talked about taxonomy, where mm-hmm, you have folk taxonomies where maybe if they ate anything, like even if it's a nut or something like that, they would still end it with a min or have min as a base word in there.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like calling things like, for instance, one other small piece of folk taxonomy that we found in this process, Casey. The pawpaw, some people call it the Indiana banana.
Yeah, I love that name. That's fun.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was the old Indiana banana.
Is there a state that rhymes with mango?
Mm,
no, I'm just going to say no.
I don't think so off the top of my head.
This is a Virginia mango and an Indiana banana. Also, you can't deny Spanish and Portuguese papaya.
Uh-huh.
Sounds very much like pawpaw.
Exactly. In fact, Alex, still in the world today, they call other peoples in other places, uh-huh, they call papaya pawpaw.
Wow.
Which causes a lot of confusion because people would say, oh yeah, give me the pawpaw. And everyone's like, you guys have pawpaw? And then they get a papaya. And everyone's like, oh, what? What? That's not what I was thinking.
Isn't language fascinating?
It really is. And then we just, you know, we throw it out and like whatever it lands on, we're like, oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah. We're going to call it that.
Yeah, truly. It's a lot of fun. It's like it's like fun chaos. It's like walking into a kindergarten room. Whoa, this is some interesting energy.
That is, I don't think I've ever heard a kindergarten class be called fun chaos. Like, I can't imagine that being fun at all. That seems very stressful. I'm like, what are they doing?
Oh, it's so much fun.
What are they eating? Oh my God.
What are they eating? String cheese and pretzels.
String cheese, pretzels, and Legos. They're eating all the Legos.
Casey, did you know that the pawpaw, this blew my mind,
yeah,
is North America's largest edible native fruit?
I don't know why, but I think in the back of my brain, I did know that,
uh-huh,
but I'm not sure if I actually did, or as soon as you say it, I'm just like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Like,
right.
Yeah,
and they're not that big.
They're not that big, but we just don't have that same like tropicalness of things. Like you go to the tropics and all the sizes of the fruit are just so vast and mind blowing. Like the star fruit, the Darien. Like I was in Ecuador years ago and there were so many fruits that I didn't even recognize just at the market all the time that were the size of an apple or bigger.
Yeah.
It was just very stunning.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess that is a thing. Things in the tropics just grow bigger.
Yeah, but they also, I think, have different things that eat them, you know? Like, there's also, old animals that no longer exist, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yes.
But also, there's still, like, monkeys and macaques and, like, things like that. And different things that still are in the tropics that still are big enough to eat these larger things that grow there.
That makes sense.
Yeah, or they just are big, filled with little seeds, and then birds come over and just gnaw on them for a while, and then they get enough of the seed in there so they can go and do something else. They don't need to eat the whole thing.
Interesting. Well, speaking of eating the whole thing, Casey.
Yeah.
It said as if someone doesn't know this for sure, as if many people listening don't know this for sure.
I maybe you thought you were saying it was said. It is said.
It has been said that the taste, of course, of the pawpaw, somewhere between a mango and a banana and a pineapple, yeah, and like you said, this kind of conglomeration of tropical fruit flavors. Uh-huh. Custardy flesh was one qualifier
now,
I loved.
I want to know what that means, because custardy flesh, I don't like. I can't like. Think about it. I can't conceptualize it.
Okay, imagine...
is a banana custardy flesh?
I would say not quite.
Mm, okay.
That's a little more fibrous. Mm. Imagine a mango,
okay,
that's super ripe.
Ooh.
And then like a little softer than that. You eat it with a spoon, I think, you know?
Okay, yeah, I gotcha.
You can freeze it, and I've heard... I read that... George Washington liked eating his pawpaws this way.
Really?
Freezing them.
Putting them on ice.
Yeah. And then, yeah, but he threw them in the freezer and then ate them with a spoon.
Yeah,
like
George Washington also took his bagel bites cold. He would warm them up and then in the microwave and he just took them cold.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He would eat them with a spoon like ice cream.
That's
they kind of turn into a frozen custard.
Yeah, that, okay, see, I can imagine a frozen custard. Like,
yeah,
that makes sense to me, but like warm custard, it doesn't compute. I don't know how that works.
Warm custard?
So anyway, again, we're going to ask for, please someone send this to us so that we can
yes,
figure out what this is.
We sound very uneducated on pawpaws because we've never had them.
Yes, I've seen them. I have been involved with them. I learned them years ago, but I never ate the fruit.
Such a shame.
Such a shame. Such a dang shame.
I can't wait until September. I'm going to make it my mission to get a hold of a pawpaw.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good. We'll bring it up every single week until then.
And when I say a pawpaw, I mean a case of pawpaws.
Yeah. Who was it? There was somebody. It was in the Romans. I think it was somewhere in the Roman history.
Mm-hmm.
One orator would end I think it was like Cato or something. He would end every one of his speeches with like, oh, and all these people should die. Like they were at war with someone, or like people were like, should we not? And
yeah,
he would end every single one like, oh, and by the way, I hate them. Like every single time. So I think maybe...
As like a punctuation?
Yeah, no, just as a sign off, you know? It's like, you know how some people at the end of their emails like, stay classy.
Yeah.
He would say, he would be like, also, I hate the Italians. Or like something like that. I guess he was the Italian. So it was some other like, weird thing. So maybe that's what we should do. Maybe less hateful, but you can be like, all right, everyone, thanks for listening to Completely Arbitrary. And as always, please send me pawpaw. Just do it.
I start signing my emails that way.
Yeah.
Just see who sends them.
To do like some quotes in like italics. So
yes.
Thinks, so
you know
like,
what they say.
Oh, he quoted himself there asking for pawpaws. Look at that.
That old chestnut, send me a pawpaw.
Yeah, that old thing.
Of course, the indigenous people of North America have a long history with this fruit, Casey.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite takeaway from this was the Iroquois mashing the fruit,
yeah,
turning it into these dried cakes.
Yeah,
You could eat those if you like, almost
fresh,
like fruit leather.
Yeah. It's gonna say fresh off the dry rack, I guess.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Or stow them away if you need to add it to a sauce later.
I love
take
that.
It, reconstitute it. It's a great idea.
It is a great idea. I guess it's kind of like dried fruit, but this would be more like a dried mushed patty, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
I almost imagine like using like chocolate, melting chocolate chips to make a dipping, to make a chocolate sauce.
Totally.
You know?
That would be so good. I wonder if people are still doing that, like mixing it with different things as like a delicious add-on somewhere.
Yeah, they
you know?
Gotta be.
Pawpaw ice cream.
You know, what would be great is putting like pawpaw preserves or like a pawpaw coulis on vanilla ice cream.
Oh man.
Without knowing the flavor yet, I feel like that would work really well.
Like, I've never had it, but I know I want this.
Some fresh mint in there.
Yeah. That actually I heard some other things about the interactions that Native Americans had with the pawpaw,
mm-hmm,
which is kind of an interesting topic. We're going to hit on it a little bit later because we're going to talk more about the ecology of this plant. But it's a curious thing that that plant, because of its great delicious qualities, where it was actually most likely bred and pulled up into like Ontario and New York, when it's usually a bit more of a southern plant, but it can go down to, I think, zone 6 or something, which is fairly cold. I think that's like, usually it doesn't get less than 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
That's about zone 6 or zone 5. But then, so they would essentially start breeding it and brought it up with them, so it became such an important food source that they did the same thing that they did with corn, where they would basically plant them and then find ones that would grow just a little bit further north, a little bit further north, a little bit further north. Huh. And then it would move with the tribes and the people through, you know, trade and migration.
Yeah, wow.
There you go, yeah. So it's it must be that good.
Casey, we've got so much more to say about this kind of incredible tree.
Yeah, we sure do.
We can't say another word before taking a break. We will be right back with more completely arbitrary Send Me Pawpaws. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking pawpaw.
Yeah, the fruit so nice they named it twice.
Wow, Casey.
Yep, that's the first thing I've ever heard ever described like that.
I wonder if they grow pawpaws in Walla Walla. Wouldn't
they probably do. I think most of the time in Walla Walla they grow pawpaws and then put in their couscous.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty good, pretty delicious.
And then ship them over to New York, New York.
Yes, they do.
We're halfway there to writing a children's
yeah,
book,
I think
Case.
We are. Yeah, this is really nice. So we talked just for a little bit about this interesting kind of history with the native peoples of the East and their relationship with the pawpaw.
Uh-huh.
And what is curious about that is they actually picked up where other things left off.
Okay.
And we talked a while back, what was it, the old hedge apple instead of the custard apple, which some people call this, which it is not, but it's in the custard apple family.
Right. Custard apple is another thing.
Yes. Yeah. That's an Anania, I think, or something a similar named plant. There are actually 8 different species of pawpaw native to the Southeast.
Really?
Yes.
I thought there was one.
There is one that's tree, but or it has a tree form. All the rest are shrubs or diminutive plants of other sorts.
Do those grow fruit?
They do. Yeah, they all fruit. They all have at least similar fruit. But I haven't found anything that says they are edible or in any way palatable by humans.
Wow.
Yeah, but a lot of times they're not well known, but wildlife certainly know about them because they've eaten the fruit and transferred the seeds everywhere.
Well, this is a big reveal.
I'm really happy to hear this.
I can imagine like a rhododendron-sized shrub having pawpaws
on it. Well, and that's the funny thing is that the pawpaw, the common pawpaw, which is a Simina triloba.
The caw paw.
The dot. I was imagining C-A-W.
Yes.
Paw. And then I had to take my brain away and be like, no, this is the C-O period P-A-W.
Love that you explained that.
I have to explain it to myself. This is, anyway, as one learns, as I learn, we all learn. So the kappa, Asimina triloba, that is the one that has the big fruit. That's the moneymaker.
Okay.
And of course, when we were talking about the hedge apple, otherwise known as the Osage orange.
Oh.
We brought up the idea of a chronological, or in this case, an ecological anachronism.
Yes.
Do you recall what that means?
Oof, do I ever not?
Oh, I was willing to be like, let's hear it.
Ecological anachronism.
Yes.
No, I don't remember this at all.
Okay, so it's essentially the idea that something is ecologically out of place, but in the sense of time.
Yes, I do remember now.
Okay, yeah. So for those of you who are also trying to remember out there in the ether, the Osage orange was our example because it's this big, gigantic fruit that is eaten by nothing at all felt today, but thousands of years ago, there were way more big mammals that roamed its natural habitat.
The megafauna.
The megafauna of eons past. Maybe not even eon. Literally, I think like 11, 12,000 years ago.
Your giant sloths.
Yes, your cave bears.
Yes.
And horses, camels, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Glyptodonts, my favorite.
Ooh, which one's that? Sorry.
They're like the weird elephant tine kind of creatures that have like, yeah, they have tusks that grow straight outwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than like out and over, it looks like just your two bottom main teeth just kind of go whoop straight out like a spear.
The battering ram.
Yeah, just, I don't know how they ate anything. They must have, I can understand why they kind of didn't last. No offense. Yeah,
not a great design, nature.
Not a great design, but it worked apparently for long enough for it to evolve and become a real thing. So anyway, I'll give credit.
Yeah.
Regardless, so these plants would have been in their prime eaten by a bunch of things. Those things all disappear, so now they are left with this anachronistic fruit that no longer serves any purpose, or in other cases, gigantic spines that protect them against nothing, because there's nothing big enough that actually gets affected by the spines, that would also be interested in eating something on that tree.
Right, like a bird could just land on the spine.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, okay, this is completely pointless.
Right.
So in this case, everything in the species, in the genre that is other than those eight that are here, they all grow in South American tropical areas.
Yes.
The Ananaceae.
Nice.
This is such a hard to pronounce episode.
It's tough, man. Sometimes we have these, like, I don't know, I feel like it's specific trees just have a lot of stuff going on that
they do.
With all these big words,
it's very frustrating.
It is nice knowing that you also have a hard time with it. I'm sorry to, you know, kick you while you're down, but
hey,
it is it does make me feel better for having a hard time with it. I go, if somebody like Casey can have a hard time with these words.
Wow, that's really sweet of you. Thank you.
Well,
we're here on the same level, Alex.
That sounds great.
We're doing this together. Well, it's the Ananaceae, which is the custard apple family.
Yes.
And that has something like 2,400 different species in that family of a bunch of different genera. Almost exclusively, I think like something like 90% grow only in the tropics and subtropics of South and North America. Always very interesting when you have that like one or very few outliers where you're like, why exactly are those outliers there?
Yeah.
And it turns out it is exactly what we were all suspecting. They were brought up by glyptodonts, etc.
There you go.
And those relationships were initially developed over millions probably of years as these animals migrated up. Once the Isthmus of Panama connected, then turns out that actually changed like the way the oceans went. For those of you who don't know, the Isthmus of Panama is that section of land connecting North America and South America that didn't used to be there.
Really?
Yeah. So you had South America was completely faunally and florally cut off from the rest of the world. It was isolated. So things developed there over a long period of time because, of course, it's tropics, so everything's kind of a little bit accelerated beyond normal rates of evolution anyway.
Yeah.
So you end up getting this isthmus got connected. It changed the flora and fauna because all of a sudden these giant sloths could just saunter straight up into Mexico, up into the south of the United States, into the Great Basin. You get the same thing with a bunch of different llamas and species like that. So you get this really interesting like migration over time of the plants and the animals. So with that, they're pretty sure came this this interesting subsection of Ananaceae, which is what we now call the pawpaw.
So, Casey, when you say that megafauna brought the pawpaw from South America up into North America, what we're talking about is them eating the fruit, them pooping along the way.
Yeah.
The tree grows as one does. Don't pretend like you haven't done it.
Don't pretend. We've seen you.
Don't pretend like you haven't taken a dump. while crossing the isthmus
of Panama. Everyone does that.
And then, you know, a tree grows there. Maybe a generation later, another one comes up, eats from that tree, takes it a little further.
Precisely.
And so on and so forth.
That is exactly the process. Happens over thousands of years, right?
I don't mean this word literally, but what a miracle. Like, how amazing that happens.
Yeah, it's the fun thing when everyone says plant migration. Everyone's like, plants don't move. And it's like, they do.
Uh-huh.
They just don't move the way that you are conditioned to accept movement.
They just need a vehicle.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the, you know, innards of gigantic elephantine and sloth-like creatures.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's what happened over a long period of time. So as I said, when that isthmus came, it also changed the climate pretty drastically, where there used to be like currents going between. Then those currents ended. Then they had a shift going other places. So then that affects everything from the weather to the climate to if there's going to be rain coming somewhere or all these crazy different like repercussions, ramifications, if you will. But the interesting thing that happens also as this all these weird climactic things happen is you get speciation. So you get the pawpaw develops the ability to go and live in way cooler temperatures, where way back then, very potentially, the Southeast was essentially a big tropical forest. Way back then, the area that we now call Oregon had oak trees and plane trees and all sorts of different things that have not grown over here for millions of years. When all these things were happening and moving around, those things were actively coming and going. So the climate and the animals and the flora, and is this connected, is it not connected, it all has this big background effect that then leaves this weird disjunct population, and they call it the boreal tropical migration kind of pattern, where they see these things happen over time, and then as the heat and the coolness shift back lower, then you get a temperate forest develop in the Southeast, which is what we have now today, with these tropical expatriates just kind of still sitting there.
Wow.
That are just evolved enough to speciate and then survive in a deciduous temperate forest.
Casey, off the top of your head, can you name like a few other ecologically anachronistic fruits or trees beside the Osage orange?
Yeah. The honey locust is a good example.
Where's that from?
Also the Southeast. They have big long thorns that are like literally several inches long.
Jeez.
And don't give way to anything. And they have these long pea pods. They're in the pea family that are probably upwards of a foot long. And they are pretty dry, but they have really big beans in it. So if you were a big animal, you could just nom on a bunch of those and then just call it good.
Can we eat those beans?
No, we don't eat them at all.
Really?
No human eats it.
Wow.
There's also the Kentucky coffee tree does this.
One of those over there?
No, that's an actual coffee plant. That is coffea. It has these little tiny beans. The Kentucky coffee tree is a gigantic big tree that grows and has these big bean pods. Again, it's in the bean family, Fabaceae, the pea family. They're these big, thick pods that are like, you know, an inch thick. They're like suitcases that are the size of like, you could hold it in your hand, like a kind of like a, it's not thick enough to be like a drink, but it's a big pod,
like a banana.
Yeah, it's like a wallet. Like, it's thick and like a wallet that you haven't taken the receipts out for a couple months.
Hey, not my wallet.
Yeah, no, my wallet also. Well, no, definitely not money, just receipts. Receipts and maxed out credit cards,
like George Costanza's wallet.
Yes, exactly. That's the size of a Kentucky coffee tree pod. and those pods are like, no one eats them. For a while, people made kind of a coffee drink out of it, and they had this kind of sort of caramel flavor to it.
Interesting.
You can get the smell a lot, but it certainly wasn't coffee. They don't have any caffeine in them that I know of.
Okay.
But they're big enough and succulent enough with like this pulp in between that animals probably just went and ate those.
I see. So these were all plants that migrated.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, I don't know if those migrated. I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
But those are at least anachronistic in that they developed with these animals, and those animals are no longer here, but the plants still exist and they still have these fruits.
I see.
Other people would say potentially the Joshua tree, or rather, I'm sorry, the not the Joshua tree, the yucca, a lot of species of yucca, which is, you know, Joshua tree. But they have these really big, gigantic fruit pods that are like 10 or 15 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
And they were thinking, well, we've actually seen this in the dung of sloths, so we know that they used to eat them. But they're not quite, they haven't quite said, it was the reason that these pods existed was to be eaten so that then they could have their seeds spread. Because the plants still spread themselves today, so it might have just been a nice thing, you know? No one's really sure.
What about like a pineapple or a durian?
Those are probably the case also. But the big thing about that is, like I said, down in South America, maybe not as many, but there is still larger animals that would eat these things today. So okay. There's a lot of bigger birds that are frutivores. Whoa. Oh my God, another word. I was going to try and say frutivorous.
Frutivorous.
Yeah. Like, they only eat fruit. But then there's also, like I said, monkeys and things like that that would also be perfectly happy grabbing one with their hands and then just scarfing on that.
Okay.
But yeah, you're probably right. A lot of those big fruits, the theory goes, developed when there were larger animals that could eat them in their entirety, the way we would eat a raspberry conglomerate fruit.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, maybe I'm like mixing things up, but aren't durian dehiscent in a way?
Ooh, I don't know. I can't give you a good answer because I don't know much about them.
Well, we should cover that tree someday.
We absolutely should. It's like the biggest fruit period or something like that. Yeah. It's like the size of a medium-sized toddler.
It's like several heads big.
Yeah. I'm always going to measure things in heads. Can I have like a quarter head of beef?
Yeah. How long a couch do you need? About 15 heads.
15 head.
That's when you start getting investigated.
Yeah, right? Oh, God.
My closet is about 30 heads deep.
Alex, I think you need to stop there, man. Well, so what's curious about this is that is like, this is how the pawpaw developed ecologically speaking. Yeah. Right? It would be eaten by these big animals and then it would be spread by them. Those animals disappeared. Go listen to our Osage Orange episode to hear a bunch of little ideas about what exactly happened there.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we can look at the pawpaw. We can see where it grows. It used to grow in these only like riparian areas, like where there was really good conditions. It was very moist. They wouldn't become gigantic tall trees, but they would also sprout from the roots really often. Either new shoots from the base, or they would just have, you know, a root comes out a little bit and then it just sends up a new sucker for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So this specific plant has this vegetative reproductive capability, just like the aspen. And so scientists actually said, well, based on the fossil history and based on just like we listened to what or we looked at what we could in terms of when first explorers came over, where were they growing, what did they say about it, talk to the native peoples and see, you know, well, do they plant them, do they grow them, do they just go find and forage them, and they essentially learned that there used to be way more everywhere when there were, you know, 10,000 years ago when there were animals that would eat them all the time.
Yeah.
Then as those animals disappeared, their range, or at least where they would grow, started to shrink. They found them only in these certain areas, and they found them in these big groves. And these groves were made up of all these genetically similar sprouts that come up. So you have like this little tiny pando, essentially, right?
Oh, wow. What kind of reproduction is that called?
That is vegetative reproduction.
Okay.
So it just sends out a shoot, and then now you have two trees. But really, it's one tree that's connected by roots underground.
Okay.
And so you end up getting this like shrinking. And then, funny enough, of all these things that we talked about today, Alex, there are these anachronisms. Humans don't eat any of them in a way that is going to actually take that seed and move it somewhere else.
Right.
Except for the biggest fruit of them all, Alex. The pawpaw.
Oh, right.
We eat the pawpaw. That is the one of all the anachronistic fruits that we still eat.
I see.
That humans actually consume and move the seeds around.
Okay.
So remember I said earlier that the native peoples actually moved it from its more nativist, if the range that is more natural before humans necessarily got involved, that was further in the south. But then as soon as humans started to come and really eat the fruit and then develop more the ideas of, oh, I can plant this seed kind of specifically. We did the same thing with corn, where we started to essentially create agriculture, move the seeds around and find which ones work best and slowly expand the territory of this plant so it goes all the way up into the very highest reaches of the temperate forest in Ontario and New York State. All of a sudden, you realize that the plant itself has made a fruit that used to be great buddies with all these old animals. They all disappear. But this is the only fruit that is still buddies with another big mammal, humans.
Right.
And now we have picked up the mantle and moved it around and expanded what used to be this tiny little range back up into a huge area.
That's kind of a bit of a success story,
yeah,
Casey.
Yeah, it is. And you know what else? There's one other funny thing that humans have done that have caused it to not only be more prevalent, but potentially maybe the most prevalent tree in our forests as time goes on, let's say in the next 80 or 100 years.
Okay, what?
So it's not a very tall plant. Maybe it's like, you know, 30 feet tall at most, 45. Uh-huh. Humans have gotten rid of essentially predators in the East, specifically in the East. There's no more wolves. There are no more cougars, things like that. They're still technically there, but they're so rare that if someone says, I saw a mountain lion or a puma or whatever, they're all the same, but they're just different kind of varieties.
Yeah.
In, say, the Great Smoky Mountains, you get, like, laughed out of the show. Like, in the Northeast, they're like, we don't have those here. Maybe they do. There's, like, every now and then someone's like, oh, I see one. Oh, there's there. But, like, oh, was that real? Was it fake? Did you have any proof? Did you see the poop? You know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So they're extremely rare, even if they are there. Wolves certainly don't exist. So all of a sudden,
sad,
deer populations exploded. We had deer all over the place, especially when in the last, say, 100 years, we really stopped hunting deer in the more intense ways that we used to. Everyone lived on wild game in the 1800s. Now we've switched that over to domesticated cows and other kinds of meat.
Yeah.
And now the deer populations have skyrocketed.
I see.
The best way to kill a deer now is to just blindly hit it with your car because there's so many everywhere. Sorry, I just know that happens so often. It's kind of absurd.
Yeah.
Especially in the East. So in places like Pennsylvania and the Mid-Atlantic, there are so many deer with no pressures of predators coming down on them. So they can just eat and eat and eat. They browse on everything. They're notorious generalists.
Yeah.
And the one thing that also the lovely, lovely pawpaw has is really egregiously disagreeable leaves. Nobody wants to eat their leaves, except for apparently one butterfly. They've developed a very close relationship.
A natural insecticide.
Precisely.
Excuse me, not an insecticide.
No, that's right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say repellent. Is that the same thing?
Yeah, that'll be the same thing. Yeah, because okay. I guess one, it doesn't kill them. They just find it to be unpalatable,
yes,
so they don't eat it. So I think you're technically correct.
Okay.
It would be a repellent.
Yes.
So you end up finding that the deer are going to selectively choose to eat everything else. So if there's a little oak seedling, it's nomed. If there is a another red maple, they eat that.
Yeah.
They'll eat everything else except for beech trees and the pawpaw.
Okay.
So I was going to say all of a sudden, but it's not. It's over a long period of time. All the old big trees, the tall ones that are, you know, 100 feet tall, as those die or as spaces open up, there is only like 90-some% of the understory is pawpaw. That is the most common understory in places. This was a Mid-Atlantic study that was talking. It was the National Park Service looking at their like capital areas. So a couple battlegrounds like Antietam and other places near the capital, as well as Harper's Ferry. So these are all national park areas run by the National Park Service. And so they went through and said, well, what trees do we have in the understory? And it was like all pawpaw.
This is shocking to me.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't know how prolific these trees were.
No one really did. At least no one really gave it two thoughts. And then they went out and studied it. They're like, wait, hold on. Turns out Pawpaw, which everyone loves, so this is great news, is kind of dominating. And it's dominating because deer don't like it. So because deer aren't eating it, and they're eating literally everything else, and there's more deer than you can shake a stick at, everything else is basically suppressed. So then only the pawpaw grows up, takes that canopy space. As soon as things die above them, then there's not going to be any new seedlings because all the oaks are dead, and all the oaks or all the acorns no longer exist. They're not coming because there's nothing to produce them.
Mm-hmm.
Then the only overstory tree is going to be like the American beech, which also is really good at resisting deer browse, and the pawpaw. So people are predicting right now that if all things being equal, we're going to have entire forests of pawpaw, or at least big patches of forest. We have big trees over there, beeches, and then a pawpaw woodland where there's nothing else because the deer have just destroyed it all.
And no deer anymore?
No, we'd have plenty of deer because they're eating literally everything that comes up. They'll go into your yards and they'll eat all that stuff. And then they'll go back out into the forest and be like, sweet acorns everywhere, you know, all the chestnuts, you're gonna eat it all. So it's an interesting, like, the interaction humans have had, have picked up the pawpaw seed and literally and metaphorically moved it along in the relationship that it normally developed with things way before humans ever came onto the scene. Then we've also affected it in another way that it's getting selected for because we have changed the ecological balance of the predator-prey relationship. So now the pawpaw is exploding everywhere because deer are like, nah, I'll rather eat literally anything else.
They have no taste.
They have no taste. Deer are just, they're kind of, they're generalists.
My friend Emily hates deer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, like, my God.
It's one of the things, we joke about this, is one of the things I always share about her with other people.
Okay.
That she hates deer.
Is it like she sees a deer and she's like, I hate that thing? And like kind of swerves towards it or something, or like
I don't know if she would go that far. She's not a monster.
She's a pacifist.
She's a good person.
Yeah,
but I think she grew up with them like roaming in her yard, and they were like a nuisance.
I gotcha.
And like they spit and like hiss and shit. You know?
Can I share something with you?
Sure.
I kind of feel the same way about horses.
Do you really?
I'm not a horse person specifically.
Wow.
You know how some people are like all of like equus, like they're about horses in like ways that are a little bit like, whoa,
right?
I get it. I am the opposite. I'm like your friend Emily. I think if I saw a horse, I'd be like, great, there's a horse, let's move on.
Wow, this is I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, well, don't get me on the subject now, but wild horses in the West. Next time on Completely Arbitrary.
Another time.
Another time.
Casey, let's get into our review of the pawpaw.
Let's do it.
Here's Alex. How it goes. We're going to give some final thoughts and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. As our resident expert, we will begin. Avec toi.
I am looking at the flower right now, and I love it.
Great.
Alex, I think that this tree, honestly, I have to give it a lot of credit for solving a bunch of problems. Like, it's somehow maneuvered its way into like two interesting niches where its fruit is delectable for everything that is able to move its fruit around, yet it is unpalatable in other realms, like its leaves, to the point where nothing wants to kill it.
Yeah.
So you get these two things. It's like it is actively the best at surviving and moving itself around. It shoots up from the roots. It grows anywhere nowadays, and everyone wants to grow it and eat it.
What a powerhouse.
Powerhouse. And then at the same time, only one beautiful butterfly species is like into it. So it's like, okay, great. The one thing that it does allow, that does find its leaves palatable, is this gorgeous butterfly. I'm gonna name this butterfly so everyone can actually look it up. The zebra swallowtail.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Like, it's a stunning little plant. Or, I'm sorry, little butterfly.
It's neither a zebra nor a swallow.
Yeah, but it has a tail. Well, actually, I don't even think it has a tail. Either way.
What a wackadoo.
It's gorgeous. So I love this plant. I think it's really great. It solved every problem. And as you know, I like plants that like are kind of like, done it. They're kind of like the millionaire startup who kind of pulls themselves up and then's like, yeah, listen, I did this myself.
Sure.
I've used you all and you didn't even know it. And I really like that it has this good fruit that I allegedly I would love.
Purportedly, so, you're going to love that fruit.
Yeah, exactly. So, however, I don't know that it is a really delightful tree in like a setting where you plant it in your front yard. It sprouts a lot. It's good for the tree, bad for, you know, having a tree in your yard that doesn't sprout.
Sure.
The other thing is that it doesn't get very big. It's an understory tree, but it's an understory tree that is like low-key taking over the overstory mm-hmm. without going into the overstory. That's pretty sick. I'm going to give this an 8.3, Alex.
That's solid, Case.
Yeah, I think this is a solid. It's got everything going for it. And if the only things I can like pull it back a little bit is that it's not like a big, it's not a gigantic tree.
And it's not a conifer.
And it's not a conifer.
And it doesn't grow on the West Coast.
I think 8.3 is what I'm going to go with on all right. this. I think it's pretty cool.
8.3 cool Golden Cones of Honor for the paw from dendrologist Casey Clapp. Case, here's what I think.
What do you think, Alex?
I think this tree basically has it all.
Yeah.
It's got the people's vote. People love it. Mm-hmm. They've let us know. It's got delicious fruit, so they say.
Allegedly.
It's got, hey, you know, we talk about utility bark.
Yeah.
This thing has the opposite of utility bark.
Yeah, it's just
I think you called it utility bark.
Yeah.
Potentially from the outside. But if you break this bark open,
oh
my word, it is so stringy and fibrous.
Yeah.
I read that it's used to make ropes
mm-hmm.
in a survival situation. You know, you're out there and all you can find is pawpaws. You got everything you need.
It's true.
The fruit is super high in vitamin. It's like a superfood. It's got shit tons of vitamin C and D and B. It's a nice looking tree. It's got curious looking flowers. A little alien, I think.
I think that's a good description of the flower.
Alien?
A little bit alien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little fleshy.
Yeah. It's a little, all right, fine.
It's a little abominable.
It looks like one of those, it looks like an eyelid or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you keep going.
I gotta give the pawpaw
9.0. 9.0.
And here's the thing, Case.
Wow.
Come September. If somebody sends me some pawpaws and I eat them and the fruit is delicious, uh-huh. I will revise my score to a 10.
Wow. Wait. You're going to automatically give it a whole other golden cone of honor. This is, you know, sight unseen.
Delicious fruit? Well, no. Barring
untasted.
Barring judgment later. So I'm giving it a 9 right now.
I understand.
But if I eat that fruit and I like it,
okay,
it's getting a 10.
Wow. I guess what I'm asking is like that's a stunning thing. Like it's a binary choice here. It's like, do I like it? Yes, 10. It's not like, meh, it's pretty good.
Almost because I'm sure I will like it.
Wow. Okay. This is really exciting. The stakes here are so high. A 10.
Yes.
A 10, Papa. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, Papa?
No. I'm not promising a 10.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying like...
I'm promising the potential of a 10.
I'm saying...
Don't get your hopes up, kid.
Yeah. Keep your pants on.
Yeah.
But just know what you're dealing with here. You're swinging for the fences.
Yeah. 9.0.
Huh. Okay.
That was our review of the pawpaw. We hope you liked it. It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week's question is from Paul Colvin. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Paul asks, I have a question about tree pests. I planted some trees this summer, and we had an especially bad year for Japanese beetles. I would inspect the trees each day and remove all the beetles I could find. My question is about defoliation. How much of a tree would need to be defoliated in order for it to potentially die or have serious growth or health issues? Casey, a couple of things.
Yeah.
Paul puts two spaces after his periods like you do.
Oh, what a gentleman and a scholar.
Also, please define defoliation.
Defoliation is the process of removing all the leaves or foliage from a thing or some amount of it.
Okay, that makes sense.
So foliage, defoliating.
Got it. Okay, so Casey, how much of foliage can a tree lose before it loses itself?
You know, this is a fun concept. Basically, you have a tree, right? It's grown. Puts out leaves in the springtime. Now, everything that it is then getting from those leaves, all the energy, mm-hmm. is a positive net gain. They've used all the energy to make their thing, their solar panel. Now their solar panel is just crushing sugars straight down into their roots.
Yeah.
So as soon as you take those away, the tree then has to say, okay, I have to now use the reserves that I either had before or that I had built up already, and then put out new leaves.
A tree can use sugar reserves from a previous year.
Yeah, and it can from the previous year or from that current year. So let's say this happens, they put their leaves on in May, then they get defoliated in June. They can use those reserves that they either built up between May and June, or that they had stored from previous year's work, and then grow new leaves from the buds that they set that same year.
Interesting.
Fascinating thing. This is actually something they do in bonsai quite often, where you'd have a tree, it puts out, let's say, 2-inch long leaves normally. And we have to remember, a bonsai tree is a normal tree just grown a very specific small way.
Right.
So if it's normally an elm tree that has 2-inch long leaves, what they'll do is they'll let the whole thing go funk, put on its whole new dress of leaves, and then they will go through one by one and clip off every single one of those leaves. The next leaves that come out are going to be way smaller because now the tree's like, oh man, I used up so much energy.
Oh.
And I also just built these buds this year, so I don't have enough energy and I can't give enough energy to put out brand new, big, gigantic leaves. They haven't stored up enough stuff.
Wow. So it literally has less energy to make leaves, so it makes smaller leaves.
Exactly. And then when it makes these smaller leaves, they fit the size and scale of the bonsai tree. Right?
I imagine like a chicken laying like quail's eggs. Like, yeah. That's all I got this year.
It's like, sorry, it's a really bad year for the crops, you know? Well, that's what they do. And this actually happened in mass, up in New England.
Wow.
Years ago, I think in the 90s or something, the 80s, there was a huge outbreak of gypsy moth.
Wow.
And gypsy moth is a moth that lays caterpillars. Those caterpillars then grow and they ate everything, like oak trees and sycamore trees, you name it. They just went ham. There are pictures of Massachusetts and New England, like I think is the Hampshire Mountains over in the west, or the Berkshires, I'm sorry. It would look like you're in wintertime when you just see like trees that completely have no leaves on them.
Christ.
But it was from like July.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was a stunning thing. Like everyone went crazy. They're like, this is the worst outbreak. Oh my God, what are we going to do? They've since worked on a bunch of other stuff. So that hasn't really happened since. Mm-hmm. But they do get outbreaks on individual trees, individual areas. And now the Japanese beetle is doing that all over the place. And they'll just eat so many things. It's kind of crazy. They're normal-looking beetles. We have a couple of them here in Oregon, but they just munch down on everything, and they just like, especially like roses here in the Rose City.
Really
big problem. We're very worried about them.
I don't know if I've ever seen a beetle.
Oh, you have! Oh my gosh!
Unless you're counting Paul McCartney.
I think we are.
Seen him plenty of times.
Well, we're gonna have to show you some beetles. You don't get out and like move sticks and rocks around very often. So,
no, it's not one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, that's okay. Don't worry.
Is that how you find them? You lift rocks and they're underneath there.
Yeah, yeah. Or you just like be walking around and looking intensely at something, and then a beetle will walk by.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very, very common. Well, a ladybug is a beetle.
Oh, I've seen plenty of beetles.
There you go. Yeah, all right. Yeah, we're good.
Can I tell you a horror story from my childhood?
Yeah, go for it.
I have this very distinct memory of one summer in my childhood bedroom, and the screen of my window.
Yeah.
I woke up and I lifted my shades, and my screen was completely dark with ladybugs.
That's terrifying.
And I flicked the screen.
Yeah.
And they all went and landed right back. They made a little pulse wave.
Oh my God.
And landed right back on my screen, and I freaked out.
Yeah, that's like you go downstairs and like everything around you is covered.
Yes.
Your dog has been completely eaten. You're like, oh my God, what's happening?
It was like a Stephen King novel. It was terrifying.
That sounds awful.
So I for a long time, I had a bit of a phobia.
Yeah, you may not like beetles then.
Well, I actually like ladybugs now. Oh, my mom was a big fan of them. Mm-hmm. So whenever time I see a ladybug, I think, hey, there's a...
Stay over there.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I enjoy you from afar.
Well, everyone should enjoy these beetles from afar as well, unless you're in Japan, in which case that's okay.
Unless you're a rose, then you want to definitely enjoy them from afar.
Very far. Well, it turns out that a tree can come back from that. So okay. Those trees over in New England, they did the same thing. I had a northern red oak that I let get a little too crunchy. I just didn't water it, and we had a big hot day. Mm. Then all the leaves got crunchy, fell off, and then it grew a whole new crop of leaves later that summer.
Yeah.
So trees will do it. The reason that they don't do it, obviously, is because they only want to do it once. That's the best energy use of their time.
Once a year.
Once a year. Put their leaves on, keep them for the entire growing season, then drop them. Put on new leaves the next year.
Casey, after last year's heat wave
yeah.
that burned a bunch of fucking trees, mm-hmm, immediately mm-hmm. after, so many trees had brand new fresh growth yeah. on them.
Same exact thing, except in this case, it wasn't the insects that damaged right. it, it was the temperatures.
Yeah.
So the question, though, also says, well, how many times can this happen? That is a really good question, because you can keep on stressing the tree, but at one point it might just be like, nah, I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna wait till next year. It's not worth it. The temperatures are too hot now, and I'm already dormant. I'm just gonna stay dormant.
There's a risk reward factor here.
Yeah, exactly. But at some point, if you just keep doing it, you'll certainly kill the tree, because it's using energy to rebuild all of its stores and put out new leaves. And if it can't store any of that energy, then it doesn't have energy to live through the summer or the winter time, and then put out new stuff in the summer. Mm. So I would say you could probably get away with one, probably get away with two in one given growing season one time. But if you keep on doing that over and over every growing season, the tree is probably going to end up slowing down and either dying or being susceptible to diseases, because it doesn't have enough energy to fight back, grow, and reproduce all at the same time.
It's almost like an immune system.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The tree itself is its own immune system. Mm. So if you damage it, you're damaging the immune system, and its response is going to be reduced. That's a really good, descriptor, I think.
And it can only do that so many times before its immune system is shot and it goes, yeah. Well, time to die.
Exactly. And it's just, it can't fight back. It's not that it is like unable to, like, you know, it's not unhealthy in a traditional mm-hmm. sense. It's just, yeah, it just can't do it. It's almost exhausted, like you're saying.
There you go.
So that's the answer to the question. So keep on pulling the beetles off, but also give the tree water. Water is going to be helpful for it.
To fight off the beetles?
Yeah. Don't fertilize it, please. All that does is add more stress sometimes, where the plant is like, it's too hot. Like, there's too many chemicals. I can't handle this. And then it can get stressed out for that. So just add water if it's a native tree or it's growing in an area that need some, but you can also treat it for different things. So, you know, you can talk to your local extension or arborists and kind of get to the bottom of how you can solve the outbreak of the beetles if you can. Otherwise, give it some water and just let it go. Did you know, Alex, if you add too much phosphorus or nitrogen to plants, that actually encourages insects, because their leaves are like, ooh, baby, I'm good. And they put out really dark green leaves that are really full of nitrogen. The plant's really healthy, but insects are like, oh my God, that looks delicious. And you actually get more insects coming on plants that have more nitrogen, because everyone wants that nitrogen. So if you fertilize plants to help them get away from something, you might actually increase that thing you're trying to get them away from by making them, quote, healthier.
Of course I knew that.
Isn't that ironic? I knew you did. Preaching to the choir, Alex.
Thank you so much for your question, Paul. If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's ARBORTRAOY pod, POD at gmail.com. Mm-hmm. If you wish to support this podcast with a monthly subscription, please do at patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the Arboretum and get 2 bonus episodes a month about other related topics and trees, or the Cone of the Month Club. You get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist sent to you in the mail every month. It's a lot of fun. Casey Clapp.
It is a lot of fun.
We've come to the end of this pawpaw episode.
We have this episode.
Okay.
Epawpawsode.
All right. I like it.
Oh.
I do wish that we had a couple pawpaws to cheers with right now. And
that would be really nice.
We could go out to our music, Milk by the Mini Vandals.
Yes.
Eating pawpaws. But yeah. Alas, that will have to wait until September.
When someone sends us some pawpaws.
That's right.
Honestly, if we say it too much, we're going to get too many pawpaws. You know, I also heard that they are a diuretic, so if you eat too much, you'll just go straight through you.
Okay.
So, you know, keep that in mind. Reach out to us so we can confirm how many pawpaws we will, in fact, be getting.
Yeah. We want to coordinate, like a potluck.
Yeah.
It's a potluck.
It's a pawpaw luck.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We will see you next time. Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Send us pawpaws.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.